Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Gopi Janavalabha Girivaradhari. Jaya Gopi Janavalabha Girivaradhari. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Janaranjana. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Janaranjana. Jamuna Tira Vanachari. Jamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 14, entitled Pregnancy of Ditti in the Evening, text 15. Atame Kuru Kalyanam. Kamam kamalalochana artoparsarpanam bhuman amogam hi mahiyasi atame kuru kalyanam kamam kamalalochana Arto parsarpanam bhuman amogam hi mahiyasi atame kuru kalyanam kamam kamalalochanah arto parsarpanam bhuman Amogam hi mahiyasi.
Thank you.
mahiyasi. Atame kura kalyanam. Therefore, may unto me Kuru kindly do Kalyanam benediction, Kamam desire, Kamalalochana, O Lotus Eyed One, Artha of the distressed, Upasarpanam, the approaching, Bhuman, O Great One, Amogam, without failure, He certainly, Mahiyasi, to a great person. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. O Lotus-Eyed One, kindly bless me by fulfilling my desire. When someone in distress approaches a great person, his pleas should never go in vain. Purport. Diti knew well that her request might be rejected because of the untimely situation. But she pleaded that when there is an emergency or a distressful condition, there is no consideration of time or situation. Om Agyanti Marandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatan Sahagana Raganatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitamscha. He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dino Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute. Tapta Kanjana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye. Vanchakalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadada Shivasade Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. I beg for the blessings of the assembled devotees, disciples of Srila Prabhupada, beg for your blessings. May our words and our consciousness be aligned with Guru Parampara. May Shri Shri Radhe Shyam Sundar be pleased by all of us coming together, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. And may all the devotees be benefited by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. Hare Krishna. So again, this is Canto 3, Chapter 14. Entitled Pregnancy of Ditti in the Evening, text 15. O lotus-eyed one, kindly bless me by fulfilling my desire. When someone in distress approaches a great person, his pleas should never go in vain. So just a little context here. Vidura was hearing from Maitreya Rishi about the appearance of Varahadev. So when he was hearing that story, Maitreya Rishi mentioned that Varahadev had killed one demon when he dove into the Garbhadaka ocean. He killed Hiranyaksha. So Vidura, hearing that, he wanted to find out more details about that. Who was this demon? Why was he killed by the Lord? So he asked that question. So Maitreya Rishi, in response to that question, he takes us back to the time of the conception of that demon. You know, he asked about the demon Hiranyaksha. So he starts with the parents of that demon and the time, what happened at conception. So we know that the parents, the mental condition of the parents, the time of conception, there are certain factors that are very important. It's a great science, actually, that's pretty much unknown in the world, or not believed in the world. One devotee in a few doctor devotees in India wrote one book called Conception as Craftsmanship, The Art of Conception. How certain factors are very important to draw a particular child to the womb of the mother. So Maitreya Rishi then begins with Diti and Kashyapa, the parents. Kashyapa Muni, he's a great Prajapati. Every time there's a creation that takes place, you know, there's a process, Lord Brahma, and he also empowers and others, the Prajapatis, to also increase the population. So Kashyapa, he's very powerful personality, Prajapatis, and his wife, Diti. Actually, it's said that as soon as two parents decide to have a child, that's the very first factor that determines what type of child is coming soon. As soon as they decide. So if two parents just say, you know what, we've been married, now let's have a child. Right then and there, something goes out into the ether, and there is some being somewhere who starts to become drawn. It begins with that. And we know the strong connection that's there. Prabhupada says, especially the mother, especially the consciousness of the mother is very important. Actually, when Hiranyaksha was fighting with Varahadev, you know, Diti being the mother of Hiranyaksha, so even though she may not have been witnessing it or seeing it, it's described in the Bhagavatam that when they were fighting, she was feeling this shudder in her heart. You know, the mother could feel and experience that something terrible was about to happen. Terrible, but also good, because killed by the Lord. But still, it's her son. And so she was feeling this, like, tremors in her body and her heart when the fight was taking place. So, strong connection. The child, the mother, the child, the father. It's said in the Vedic scriptures that oftentimes, this is in general, but the first son will inherit the qualities of the mother, and the first daughter will inherit the qualities of the father. Formerly, these things were much more true than they are today, because everyone had certain position in society, and it was very defined and very strong, and therefore you could kind of predict these things. Whereas because of the mixing, the mixing of people in different positions and castes, and everything is mixed, so things get a little bit more tangled inside of people. So some of these rules that were always the case have now been a little bit hard to determine. You know, just like a Kshatriya, think about what a real Kshatriya was at one time. They were always heroic. They were always generous, big-hearted. They were always courageous. Now you find people with some Kshatriya qualities, but they may not have others. It's all mixed. See, you may find a firefighter. So there's a Kshatriya spirit there, right, to run into a burning building and save lives. But at the same time, they may be have all kinds of bad habits and other tendencies, and so we, it's like we find little fragments of the different varnas in the world today, whereas formerly it was very strongly defined. Oh, Brahmana is always like this. Kshatriya is always like this. The son of the first son of the parents inherits the qualities of the mother. So these things are described, and we know that, you know, there's a nice story of one queen in the Vedic literature. This is in the Markandeya Purana. Have you heard of this queen Madalasa? Madalasa. She was, the king was King Ritatvaja, and his queen was Madalasa. So she was like a sage-like queen. Husband was a king, so he was Kshatriya, but she was like sage. And so he wanted children, he wanted sons, so that they could also continue, become the next kings. So first son that he has, he gives him this name, something about him being being able to defeat enemies in battle. But because the mother, when the child was born, the mother was absorbed in Atmagyan, knowledge of the soul. So she would sing lullabies to him as a baby. But these lullabies were Atmagyan. You know, now we have these kind of nonsensical things that we sing. But she was actually teaching. She was teaching that we're giving you this name, but it's just a superimposition on your soul, your Atma, which is completely pure. We're giving, you're also having this body. This body is also a superimposition on your soul. She said, why are you crying, my little darling boy? The Atma does not cry. And she would sing this lullaby, and then eventually this son grew up. He was meant to be a king, but he went off to the forest, became a sage. So that was son number one. Then son number two, same scenario, same thing happens. She's singing these lullabies. And he also became renounced. So the husband was getting a little worried. What is my wife doing? Third son, same thing. Fourth son, he says, okay, you have to stop these songs, these teachings. I need to have a son who's the next king, so please, you adjust something here. She was powerful. So she agreed, and she also gave teachings of what a real king is, who a real king is, the qualities of a king. And so he did grow up. This last son, the king asked, you name him this time. And she named this boy Alarka. Anyone know what that means? It means mad dog. So the husband was very upset. Why would you give our son such a terrible name? Mad dog. And she said, you also gave him names that don't make any sense. You named him the destroyer of the enemies, but the Atma does not have any enemies. You named him the one who moves swift in battle, but the Atma is not moving like that in battles. And so your names are also nonsensical, so what's the problem with my name? Alarka, mad dog. She was always defeating him with her understanding of things. She spoke from a higher platform. So anyway, this last son becomes a great king because she spoke in that way to him. But she gave him also a locket, like a little golden locket. And she said, when it comes to the time in your life, you no longer know what to do or how to solve the problem that's before you. And you're just bewildered and you're confused and you don't know what to do or which way to go. When that day comes, open this locket. And she put a message. She engraved a message in that locket. So he was a great king, and he ruled, and he was solving so many problems and figuring so many things out. He was loved. And then the time came where that time came for him. But what's this situation? I'm confused. I don't know what to do. What is the point? He was asking these questions. And then he opened up this little golden locket and it said, now you should give up this society and go off into the forest. And if you can't do that, if you're not prepared to do that, then associate with sadhus. Now is the time for that. And so just like that, and at that time, he just read that and said, yeah, she's right. And he began to associate with sadhus, and he also became liberated. Perfect. So this is a nice story just to show the importance, the power of the parents in determining what type of child. The Bhagavatam gives four factors. Later in this chapter, you'll see a verse where four things are mentioned that are important for the parents before a child is born, for them to consider and to follow as guidelines. The first thing we mention is the mental condition of the mother and the father at the time of conception, and even before when there's planning for a child. So that's one factor. The second factor is the particular time. We see from this story, we'll hear why that's important. The wrong time. There are auspicious and inauspicious times. Another factor is the husband's direction. This is, of course, taking it for granted that the husband is very dharmic and disciplined. Usually, as the husband had the guru, the husband would be maybe more familiar with the scriptures and things like that, and so he would give a certain guidance, and for the wife to also agree with that. So the husband's direction, that's another factor. And then the obedience to the demigods. Obedience to the demigods, respect for the demigods, because we know the demigods, there's planetary influences, personalities are behind that, and certain things can be done to also assure that an auspicious birth takes place. So these are four factors the Bhagavatam gives. And we hear in this pastime, all four of these are neglected. All four of these are compromised. Here, Diti is attempting to persuade and flatter her husband to have her desire fulfilled. Now, Prabhupada explains her desire is not unreasonable. Actually, it says that it's not that she just became lusty and, you know, it says apatya kama. Kama means lust, right? But apatya means child. Her strong desire was for a child. There's nothing wrong with that. That's, of course, you know, and she makes a case and she explains to her husband very nicely. She says, me and my 12 sisters, we all chose you as a husband, and our affectionate father, Daksha, he also sanctioned that. And you also accepted us as your wives. And all my other sisters have a child, and I don't. So you also accepted to give us shelter. So it was our desire, sanctioned by our father, accepted by you, and so I'm approaching you now that I'm the only one of your wives. 13, Daksha had 13 daughters that were all given to Kashyapa Muni in marriage. So her request here is very legitimate. And she also, it was legitimate that she spoke up about it too, because often men can be very oblivious to the needs of their wives. So it's not that she should have just, you know, been humble, and she, sometimes we have to express what our need is, especially in a relationship. So especially I see that's important, that whatever needs are happening in the heart, it should be brought forth and expressed. So these things are all fine. She's a wife, she wanted to have a child, that's what's meant to happen. And she made it known, and therefore Kashyapa, his first response was certainly, this is your desire. But he said, but let us wait. It's not a good time. Certainly this is a legitimate desire. Certainly this will take place. But it is not a good moment. It is not a good time right now, so let us wait. So this is where Diti becomes very, you know, this is the verse today where she's saying, she's making arguments why they should not wait. So in that context, she's saying, oh, lotus-eyed one, a little flattery there too, you know, speaking very nice, you are such a great person, you are famous throughout the worlds, you have beautiful lotus eyes, kindly bless me by fulfilling my desire, not later, but now. When someone in distress approaches a great person, his pleas should never go in vain. So she said, I'm in great distress right now, so there's no question of waiting. If you're a great person doesn't wait to fulfill a desire of a person. Don't embarrass me. I'm vulnerable right now. I'm in need. So please honor my request. So both of them are a little at fault. Because she's being very willful, even though Kashyapa Muni can see a little bit the future. He's very powerful, and he also knows if we were to conceive at this time, it would be inauspicious. So she's kind of pushing for that. And he also, Prabhupada explains, I'm going to read this quote, very interesting, in the next purport, just one line. He was not able to refuse her. He was weak-hearted. So even though he saw that it wasn't best, she just began to flatter him a little bit and kind of push for it, and he said, okay. And that was his fault, because he could see the outcome was not good. Prabhupada says, it appears that Kashyapa was already inclined to have sexual enjoyment with his wife, and because he was not a strong man, he tried to dissuade her only with pacifying words. So it's an interesting point that we can't really be taken advantage of by another person unless internally something in us consents to it. You know, if you're very strong internally and someone comes to persuade you or try to, you, like if you compare Kashyapa Muni to someone like Haridas Thakur, right? Think about this. Imagine the full potency of Maya. Maya's illusion. We're all illusioned by Maya in different ways, through different people or different objects, whatever it is. Maya has all these different ways, these different agents. But imagine the full potency of Maya comes to you in one form to tempt you. That's how it's described with Haridas Thakur in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. The full power of Maya came into one person who came to tempt Haridas Thakur. So that's the full potency of Maya coming to confuse or bewilder you. So how could anybody resist that? How could anybody be so powerful as to be able to take on the whole potency of Maya? But Haridas Thakur, she came to him, and she was also speaking such nice words and tempting him in various ways. But inside of his heart, there was such a strong power of Krishna consciousness that he was chanting the holy name, and he said, you know, just come back when I'm done chanting. Just let me finish chanting, and certainly I'll honor your request. And she came back, and he's still chanting. And she left, came back, he's still chanting. He's just so absorbed that he could resist. So now if he was weaker, right? Or if he was kind of like, okay, there's the chanting of the holy name, but I also have, they were in his heart and she came and persuaded. And it's very likely a person will give in. So Prabhupada is saying here, it appeared that Kashyapa already was inclined to do this act. It's because later Kashyapa kind of almost blames his wife, you know, like, oh, well, look what you've done, not taking the responsibility that he also could not help but give in. So people take advantage of us, but oftentimes there's something in us that allows for it because we're a little mixed inside. We're mixed. And so even being taken advantage of by another person if you have something powerful that's been created in your heart through the process of Krishna consciousness, through this, the awakening of Atma realization, then anyone who comes with anything, one can be okay. But when we're filled with contradictory desires, or many desires, then we may get pulled in. So that's what happened here. So so we mentioned one of the factors for the particular child that comes is the mental condition of both parents. So what's the mental condition here of both parents? The mother was very willful, and she was also feeling shame. And the husband was very weak, and he was also feeling anger at his wife for doing this, even though he also was part of it, right? And this was the mental condition of both parents. And there, and then therefore we're hearing what comes, because these are powerful, these are, he's a Prajapati, he's a powerful person, but he's also, Prabhupada says his semen was very powerful, but also he, because it was mixed with anger that was in his heart at that time, and then you take the consideration of the of his wife as well, and then this comes as a result, Hiranyaksha. Now we know this is also the Lord's will. Many things are happening at the same time, but we're looking at it from this angle because this is an important topic for devotees to think of. You know, devotees are having children. This is a an important thing to consider. That's why I'm emphasizing it. But we also know this is Jai and Vijay, right? Hiranyakashipu and Hiraksha coming down. So this, the Lord's will is behind this. But just kind of focusing in a little bit on the condition, the mind of the parents, the time was important. It's said that there's a time in the evening when Lord Shiva is traveling with his ghostly followers. So it's an inauspicious time because they're active, they're out, they're traveling. And so Lord Shiva, being very merciful to the ghosts, everybody shuns ghosts, but Lord Shiva, somehow he's compassionate to these beings, even though they're often very degraded, and he gives mercy to them, and therefore they're attracted to him, and they stay with him sometimes. So when they're all traveling at this time, Lord Shiva looks for an opportunity to give a ghost, because the ghost doesn't have a physical body, and that's part of the suffering, because they still have desires and inclinations, but nothing can be fulfilled for them. So when they're traveling at this time, if Lord Shiva sees somebody engaged in intercourse at this time, he may send one of these ghosts to get a physical body from that, those people, that person, that woman. He may put that ghost into the womb of a woman. So it's very good for the ghost, but it's not good for the parents. But it's very good for the ghost. Now they're, okay, pretty decent people, and they're going to appear again and be, you know. But for the parents, not very good. So anyway, so that's the factor, the time. So Kashyapa saw this is not a good time, but still. So, you know, it's like I was saying, these things are not accidents also, you know. Like, oh, if it was just a little bit later, and if we did, you know, it seems like we have this control that if we had just made a different decision at that one time in my life, my whole life would have been different. Or if I just waited a little longer. But don't forget, we're all under this law of karma, which is very exacting. It's just at the right moment, things are taking place. It is very amazing, actually, how all of this is being arranged. So these aren't total accidents, but still, these outcomes come. The law of karma is perfectly just, perfectly accurate. You know, sometimes you hear about some accident in the world, and we wonder, how could this be, you know? Like recently there was this plane crash. So all these different people from, you know, different places and different backgrounds, and just imagine the process when they were choosing to be on that plane, you know, looking up the information, okay, it costs this much, you know, different people, different situations, and they all came together on this plane and all passed away. Everyone died who was in that plane crash, I think it was to Washington, D.C., pretty recently. So we might wonder, how does that work? You know, like karmically, like everybody, different countries, different places, and were they all really just meant to pass away at that time together? And actually, it's described how this works. The way it's described, it's very interesting. So in our chitta, in our consciousness, there are unlimited samskaras, impressions from previous lives. Right? So those impressions, they sort of echo into the present moment, and then they have some, they may lead to a certain desire that you have or a certain inclination, and then you act on it, and then there's a karmic reaction that comes back into you. So there's this whole process that takes place within our consciousness. Unlimited samskaras. Everything you've ever done, experienced, smelled, tasted, heard is recorded. And those ones that are very powerful that you think, I like that, was a good experience. That's why now we have a certain desire towards that thing or a certain aversion towards it if we had a bad experience. So it feels like our freedom that I like this thing, I like this music, I like to travel here or there, I like these kinds of people. But actually, it's all previous samskaras that are rising up into our consciousness and having that effect on us of that I like this, I don't like this. And we usually act on it. We're surrendered to this whole process, so we're entangled and just creating more and more. So because in our chitta, there are all these samskaras. Now, there's also the universal chitta. It's called the Mahatattva. The Mahatattva, the chitta is a portion of the Mahatattva in the living being. So, but if you take this cosmic level of the Mahatattva, all the samskaras of all living beings are present in the Mahatattva. So just me, in my chitta is just my impressions, my past lives, the memories, the impressions. But in the element of the Mahatattva, which is like an all-pervading element, every single living being's samskaras, impressions, everything that was ever recorded, everything that was ever experienced is all contained. So it's the Mahatattva that coordinates everybody getting their karma together. You know? So like on a plane that crashes, it's like you think, well, how did all these people be brought together at the right time and they all had decisions to get this plane? But it was their karma to pass in that way. And it was coordinated by the power of the Mahatattva. So it's incredible. And how could it be so? Because it's so intelligent. It's like this cosmic computer that computes everything for all living beings simultaneously. So that how we interact, everything is also being perfectly coordinated. You know, like say you find some money one day. You found the money, so that was your karma, right? To suddenly have some money. But someone months ago had lost it. So how did that get arranged? You know, maybe someone 10 years ago hid it somewhere. And then 10 years pass, and then you find it. It was your karma to find it. But then what about that person? That's not within my karma. That's their own karma. And how did that work? Well, it was all arranged by Mahatattva. All the samskaras are there, and everybody at the right time is getting everything that is destined. So there's actually a verse coming up here where Kashyapa, once he decides to submit with his wife, it's a verse, very interesting. It says, Natva Dishtaya, that once he decided that he was going to do this act and with his wife, it says Natva Dishtaya, that he bowed down and offered his obeisances to Dishtaya. Dishtaya means destiny. It's like he understood, this is I surrender to destiny. You know, we have the word destiny, so in Sanskrit Dishta, you can see how Sanskrit is the, you know, mother language of all other languages. So this destiny is coming from Dishta. So Natva Dishtaya, that at some point he bowed down to the material energy. He bowed down to karma, to destiny, all these things. Karma, you know, what is the purpose of karma? you know, we're doing certain things and then a karmic result comes. And usually we, if it's good, we try to enjoy it. And if it's bad, even though we've created it, if it's bad, we want to avoid it. If it's good, we indulge in it. And in this way, we stay entangled in the law of karma, in this process of karma. But the real point of karma, we have to stop calling it good and bad. We have to stop reinforcing that this is really good, because when you say this is good, it means usually it's giving me some pleasure. My will was fulfilled. Well, just by saying it's good, we reinforce this desire for it. This is bad. I really don't like that this is happening right now in my life. This is really bad. It locks us in to this good, bad, my will, not my will, then it's bad. And we stay in this kind of consciousness that keeps creating karma. So we have to, when something good comes, you don't get too excited. Just see, okay, maybe this is arranged by Krishna for some, let me take advantage of what's come and use it properly. Something really bad comes, you also don't call it bad. As soon as you call it bad, you feel that it's bad, you think that it's bad, and then you get trapped. You go down this hole. This is really, really, really bad. But karma, the real purpose of all this good, bad, good, bad, good, bad, good, bad, good, bad, is that we become weary of that, of both. And we ask the question, is there something beyond this? You know, sometimes my life is good, sometimes it's bad. And then it's good again, and I'm happy, I'm excited. But that happiness that I'm getting into keeps that consciousness. And the negativity comes, and I'm devastated and destroyed, and it's also like, this was the worst thing, this is bad. So eventually, when we experience enough of the good, bad, it's like you're spinning on a wheel over and over again, and the realization that's meant to come from all this good and bad karma is, what else? Is there anything eternal? Why am I absorbed in this? The nature of this world, it's like waves in an ocean. They're just going to constantly keep coming. You know, you wonder, why is the ocean, they keep producing waves? It's the nature of the ocean. So one, sometimes the ocean is peaceful, sometimes it's turbulent. And then it's peaceful, and then it's turbulent. If you're in that ocean, and it's going back and forth like this, life after life after life, you get the realization, I want out of this ocean. Look, what it just keeps changing. But there's something in my heart that wants something eternal. What's that? Is that possible? Who can lead me there? Those questions come up. So the whole point of the karma and the good and bad karma is not that we get into the good and avoid the bad, and that keeps us locked into it. But you start to withdraw from both the good and the bad. This is Chaitanya Charitamrita. Says to say that this is good and bad is mental concoction. But we're so it's so ingrained in us that it's going to be a process. But we might, even in this life, get the realization to let go a little bit. Let go. Don't get lost in either one of those. It's hard, especially when great, terrible things happen, right? And again, we call it terrible, but really it's an experience. What we need from karma is the fullness of experience. Get the fullness of it. Get all the good of this world, all the bad, and then you're going to get the realization that none of it is where it's at. But we remain hopeful. When things are bad, we're hoping for the good again, right? And there's that desire. And what we mean by good is being comfortable, sense gratification, some kind, mental or sensual, whatever it is. But that's what we mean when we say that. And that's why it keeps us trapped in that consciousness. And therefore, Krishna is saying to Arjuna, Mam Ekam Sharanam. Arjuna had so many reasons why he shouldn't fight. He was thinking about, you know, this is family, this is inappropriate, there may be sinful reactions. He was still in that place of the material level of the good and the bad that may come from this. Isn't this wrong? Isn't this bad? And Krishna's message was, Mam Ekam Sharanam, just surrender to me. The mind is going from determining what's good, what's bad, is rising above that and just seeing surrender to Krishna. Everything for Krishna. Raghunath Das Goswami in his Mana Shiksha, the instructions to his mind, he has this verse also. For devotees, na dharmam shuddhigana Vraje Radha Krishna Prachur Paricharyam. No longer be lost in determining what is Dharma, what is not Dharma. This is his instruction for devotees. Don't keep thinking this is Dharma, this is not Dharma. Don't be lost in that. This is good, this is bad. Just lose yourself, Vraje Radha Krishna Prachur Paricharyam. Just lose yourself in love and service to Radha Krishna. Put your consciousness there. And gradually you'll rise above the dualities of this material world and you'll be on the absolute plane, which is always good, all good absolute. Down here, good has an opposite always attached to it. Good always has bad attached to it. The dualities are all connected to each other. Hot, cold. Just like hot and cold, it's one thing, temperature. There are two attributes of one thing. It's called temperature. And so same thing with good, bad, sorrow, joy, love, hate. The love of this world can very quickly turn into hate because they're attached. But there is a love that has nothing else attached to it. Just love. There is a goodness that has no bad attached to it. Just pure, absolute goodness. So we want our minds and our consciousness. Bhakti means the process of giving the attention to the absolute plane. Krishna is all good absolute. The more I can direct my attention to the absolute platform, the more I'll begin to rise above, internally rise above the dualities of this world. But if I'm always looking down and I'm always thinking, this is good, this is bad, this is right, this is wrong, those dualities keep us locked in. So it's a nice section here, and we'll end because it's showing the complexities of karma and how things work in this world. A little bit off, wrong time, wrong mental state, a bad reaction comes. But you know, it's described here also, Ditti and Kashyapa, because Ditti was feeling some remorse for doing this. And also she did have respect for Shiva, who's a great devotee of the Lord. She also did appreciate her husband Kashyapa. She also had some very good qualities. And so she was told by her husband, who could see the future, that now these demons will be our children, but they will also be killed by the Supreme Lord and our grandchild. Who's the grandchild? Prahlad will be Prahlad. It's described Prahlad was the grandchild. He was born into the demon family. But because of Ditti, also Kashyapa and Ditti, because she was feeling some remorse, she was lamenting a little bit. She also was very devoted to Shiva. So it was a few mixed things in there. Some demons come, but then this unbelievable pure devotee comes, the grandchild also. But you see, the point is the material world, it's like little adjustments and these results, and we have to get weary of all of these things and start to fix our minds on actually what's absolute, because down here we get... it's very complicated, we get very entangled. So we can think of sadhana like this, is to withdraw from all of these dualities, the shifting dualities, and a complete focus on what is true, eternal. Pariksha lokan karma chitan. You know this verse Prabhupada always quotes, tat vijnanartham sa gurum evabhiga chet, that one should approach a spiritual master to get vijnan. But right before that section, which is always quoted, who approaches the spiritual master? Pariksha, like parikshit, means examine. Pariksha lokan karma chitan. One who's examined fully all of the worlds, lokan, which means all kinds of experiences. Once they fully examined it all and they realized karma chitan, it is all produced of karma. And in karma, there's nothing eternal. That person who's examined everything, putti, you know, like we have the word, putti means like around, like we have parikrama, to go around. So pariksha, iksha means like to see. So in other words, one who's fully seen everything this material world has to offer through all the different lokas, through all the different experiences, Once you've fully seen it all, and you realize it all is just karmic reaction, karma chitan, then tat vijnanartham sagurum evabhigachet. Then you approach a spiritual master. Samit panistrotriyam brahmanishtam. And it describes who that spiritual master is. He's fixed in God consciousness. He's heard from his spiritual master. He's heard the Vedas. He can explain the concepts. That's the and what's the quality of the disciple? Samit pani. He comes to the guru with the, it says here, the sacrificial wood for the sacrifice. He comes with the wood for the sacrifice. So, you know, in ancient times, you know, you go into the forest, you get wood, a sacrifice will be performed by the spiritual master. But the idea is that you're giving to what the spiritual master needs and wants for the sacrifice. And actually, it really means you're giving yourself. The sacrifice is you. I sacrifice myself to my spiritual master. That's really what's happening, the fire. So that's a great verse from the Mundaka Upanishad, because it explains once you get, you become tired of becoming tired. You get tired of becoming tired. And you've examined everything. You've seen it all. And it takes us a long time to get there, right? Maybe we think, I haven't seen it all. I still have this thing I want to do. I still have this hope for enjoyment. And then we're not quite ready for guru. Because once it's fully examined, fully comprehended, then one sees, I have to find a guru. And I have to sacrifice myself. And then everything changes. Now you come out of the law of karma and you enter the law of love. You come under the power of pure, absolute love. That is bhakti. That is bhakti. So we have an opportunity even now to taste and to experience that bhakti, to get the realization, to get that faith to increase, and then to finally come to completely giving ourselves in surrender to Guru and Krishna. That is the way out of this entanglement. So we'll stop here. Any comments, reflections, questions?
Thank you, Ghanshyam Prabhu, for your wonderful class, as usual. I think, and I want you to confirm this, I always wondered about karma as far as devotees are concerned. You know, we hear, once we become a devotee, we become initiated, our karma is. Now, what I got from your class, the latter part, was that we as devotees in our consciousness, we go away from the good and the bad and we absorb ourselves in the holy name or transcendental topics. Mm. Is that what it means, that a devotee is, his karma is gone, in the sense that because it's in other words, it's the consciousness. So it's not, in other words, I may have to, you know, I may be one of the person who was supposed to go and be in the airplane crash, you know, mm-hmm. so mm-hmm. I had to go through that. Mm-hmm. And it's not that I may not go through that, mm-hmm. but it's because my consciousness is above the good and bad, and that's how I have, that's how we transcend the karma. Although we heard the Prabhupada said, if you, some major thing, then you just, you know, your hand is supposed to cut off, then you just, maybe a finger will cut off or whatever, something. Mm. Heard that aspect as mm-hmm. well. So maybe you can comment on that, on my thought.
Yeah, as we perform bhakti, because bhakti is also an energy that's entering into us, it's said that it can also begin to dissolve some of the past samskars in your chitta. So some of those samskars are reactions that are meant to come. So there is a way in which we start to, when we're infused with the power of bhakti, we burn away previous samskars. And those samskars were going to be our karmic reactions. And sometimes they're, you know, like we talk, like Prabhupada says, sometimes it's reduced, the reaction is reduced by the grace of Krishna. Maybe karmically, if you were just totally in, you know, engrossed in karma and the law of karma, as an ordinary person like this, there may be some heavy reaction coming, but because now you're a devotee and you've been practicing, you may just get a little something as a reaction. So what's actually happening is in the citta, those unlimited samskaras are getting burned away and dissolved by the power of bhakti, and also by uplifting our consciousness from that lower platform, which is identified with all those samskaras. See, samskaras don't force you to act, but it's like something that comes up, but we're so identified that we feel we have to respond to it. Like when you have some craving or something, I have to eat this. You don't. So the samskaras come up as a reaction from the past, and it's almost like a picture of something. Some picture is presented before you. But because we're so identified, it's like we have to fulfill it, or we have to avoid this, or get this, or like this, or don't like this. But actually, if you're starting to have a little separation, if there's some atma realization that's starting to come, you can think, oh, I don't have to act on this. You separate from it. So all these things are happening simultaneously. So there may be karmic that's meant to be coming under the law of karma, but because now you're coming to a higher level, you can see, oh, here comes a karmic tendency, I choose Krishna instead. That possibility becomes there. That possibility comes. And also, like I was saying, also this other idea of the bhakti, the power of bhakti dissolving samskaras. Eventually, bhakti will dissolve all samskaras, all of this. And we're just moved alone by that power of bhakti in service to Krishna. So, yeah, those can be eliminated. But for many of us, we're still like 1 foot here, 1 foot there. And so we have this other situation. You know, even when you become very, very advanced, there's still karmic reactions usually coming. But Prabhupada says it's not technically karmic reaction if you're a devotee. It's maybe the same reaction you were supposed to get, but there's a twist to it. There's Krishna now is involved, so somehow it's seen differently by that person, and it actually may help you advance spiritually. So even though it may be the same thing that was meant to happen, it's a little different. Krishna's now involved. There's a poem in Sanskrit called, a style of poem called Shlesh Alankar, which means that there's a poem, and there's just certain words there, but it has a double meaning. It has a literal meaning on the surface. It's talking about maybe the sky and the different stars, and it just means something very literal. But there's another hidden meaning in that same line for those who are able to perceive it. So karma can be like that, like you have karmic reactions coming, and it was because of your actions, here's the reaction. But as you become a devotee, you see a hidden meaning in what comes to you. You see Krishna's hand pulling you back. And so even though it's the same reaction coming, but now there's a twist. I don't know how to say it. There's something, you know, there's a difference. It's Krishna behind it, even though it's the same kind of result that may be coming to you. Microphone coming.
I heard an example given that it's like you when you throw a ball on the wall, it comes back. But for those who are trying to be practicing devotional service, then Krishna is standing there. So he gives you the ball back. And maybe with the same force, but there's a...
His hand touches it.
Yeah,
it's like sanctified now.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. So Prabhupada says that in that Tate Nukampam Shushumikshamano, that verse, Prabhupada says, even though the devotee there is saying, this is my karma, but in the purport, Prabhupada says, it's not technically karma if you're a devotee. So that devotee is praying, right? Like, I accept all my karmic reactions. So that's the humility of a devotee. It's all my karma. I've done terrible things, and here come the reactions. But because you're a devotee, the actual truth is technically it's a little different than karma. It's got the touch of Krishna, like you're saying. Yeah. Hare Krishna.
I remember hearing Srila Prabhupada on a tape. He said, when one can accept everything as Krishna's mercy, he can go back to Godhead.
Yeah. That's it. That's it. Everything that comes. And see, as I was saying, when something bad comes, we think, oh, bad, not what I want, which means we're resisting. We're resisting what's actually coming to us to save us, because if we are in a state of acceptance, then these things will uplift us. But it's hard to get there. I'm not saying it's easy, but accept everything that comes. Try not to call it good or bad. Try to see it as Krishna's grace coming to you. Easy to say, and then, you know, I go home later today, forget everything. Some one thing happens, I get upset. But we have to hear. We have to hear. Keep hearing.
Also, you said that this karmic reaction, all of this, is orchestrated by the Mahatattva. Sounds like the Mahatattva is a person.
Yeah. Well, it's a power. It's like an intelligent power designed by the Lord. So it's almost like a machine, like a computer, you know? It perfectly does. And that's why if you get cursed by somebody, what they can do is they can... How can somebody curse you if it's not within your karma, right? Like you would think, is it in my karma? Somebody just sends a curse. So it's described that a person from power, from a certain shakti, from austerity, they can implant a samskar in the Mahatattva. They can create a samskar, put it in the Mahatattva, and direct it towards a person. And like when Parikshit has said, in 7 days you will die. Shringi, 7 days you will die. So an implant into the Mahatattva, now it's there. So even though it wasn't in Parikshit's destiny, perhaps, you know, then it was put by somebody, and then it has to come to him. It has to come once it's there, because it's sent forth in that way through the Mahatattva. It's interesting. Yeah. Huh? Yeah, that's... Yeah. Yeah, it's tricky. That's why I said it's very... Many things are happening at the same time, but it's also described like this. Like someone can put something in the Mahatattva, then it wasn't meant to come to you, but it comes to you now, you know? So it's all happening simultaneously. Even in this story, right? We're hearing like, oh, if this didn't happen, if it... But this is also the Lord's will. Vijay and Jai are coming down as the... To, as, yeah. Not my sanction.
He says that. Not a blade of grass, yeah. Not my, you know.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. Right. But then that shows up in this pastime, you know, where these demons come, and then there's parents who kind of created those demons because of their mental state, and so it looks like they're deciding things, and it's their factors in all this. But you see, that's why I said it's like an incredible cosmic computer. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm the Mahatattva. I'm Shiva, I'm Vishnu. Yeah.
That doesn't mean God is not a dictator. He's not an autocrat.
No, it's not.
Like he's not punishing like whoever.
Oh, that's my end.
We are responsible.
Yeah, he's. Look. Whoa.
No, but you have to make both.
It's
not Krishna.
Well,
we are cooperating. Krishna is showing, but we also want it.
Yeah.
Yeah, one thing is we're not Calvinist, you know. It's not like we're getting punished by karma. It's, hey man, I'm talking now. It's not like we're getting punished by, you know, karma, like the devil. It's not God, it's something else. I mean, like you're saying, you know, Krishna's not a blade of grass moves. The Mahatattva is also Krishna, energy. You know, and in one sense, karma, one is... And when we say in devotional service there's no karma, but we say also Krishna karma or spiritual karma. So, and we call karma reaction. Well, reaction is meant for helping someone. What?
The definition of karma, Rupa Goswami Pada is, Vishnu Chakrati Bhagavad gives the commentary on Annabala Siddhasundam Gyana Karmadhyana Pitam, which is not covered. So in that case,
so he said that so long I have a desire to enjoy separately from Krishna, it is karma. It doesn't matter what it is. So long I have a desire. So it is not the activity, it is the consciousness, intention behind the activities. Like Prabhupada says, devotee goes to factory, karmi also goes to factory, but their reaction are completely different. One is devotional, one is pure karma.
Yeah, you got my point, you said it better than me. But karma, in one sense, karma is just Krishna dancing with us, but we don't want him to be there to dance with us, you know? Because, I mean, we say, like, reaction, it's like, hey, if you you talk to your kid when they're small, now they'll, you know, you do that, you're going to get a whooping when your dad gets home. That's a reaction. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, it's to help the kid improve. So the materialist, the conditioned soul, they don't want Krishna there. Mm-hmm. So they get this process without the idea that Krishna is there. But the consciousness is, well, Krishna is there. And he is helping us. And mm-hmm. we consciously want to re-engage with him. And he's very excited to, you know, that's good karma. But we want to, we say karma, good karma is to remember Krishna, and bad karma is to forget him. So you deal with who's getting it next.
There should be no issue here. It's very clear. Krishna made it so clear. Stop playing games. It is what it is. We know what it is. What is the confusion? Krishna made it so clear. You're acting like there's some confusion. There's no confusion.
Yes, Prabhu.
Prabhu says, thank you for the great class. I've been holding this question for a few months, so don't take this personally, but it's coming to you.
Yeah.
It is my understanding that we are Vaishnavas and that we are personalist, that you know, we see a person in everything. Mm. If we look at the wind, we see Vayu. You know, if we are Vaishnavas, if we're personalists, we don't just see the wind, but we see Vayu. An impersonalist will say, oh, that's just the wind. A devotee will say, that's Vayu. Mm. When we look at the ocean, we don't just see dumb water, you know, we see Varuna. We should see the demigod Varuna. Mm. And impersonalists will say, oh, it's just water, you know, condensation, rainfalls, you know, the earth atmosphere did it, geological evidence and history. But devotees, personalists will say, that's Vayu. We look at the atmosphere, we see Indra. Oh, Lord Indra is in charge at the rain, lightning, the atmosphere. An impersonalist would say, oh, meteorology, you know, this is weather patterns, low pressure, high pressure. Mm. A devotee, a personalist, would see the person, Indra, Varuna, Vayu, the earth. We don't just see, oh, it's just dumb dirt, you know. We say, oh, that's Mother Bhumi. Mm. We should respect it. It's not just dumb dirt. So why is it that when it comes to Krishna's energy, to Krishna's Shakti, then we as devotees say, oh, it's impersonal. It's not personal. I get very offended because I only see person. I only see Krishna, even in his Shakti, even in his energy. Mm. So the Holy Spirit of God, the Ladini Shakti of Krishna, is not impersonal to me. It's very as much person as Krishna himself, because I don't see the wind. I don't see the ocean. I see the person. Mm. So when I see Krishna's energy, I don't see just dumb energy or just dumb light. You know, it's as much personal as Krishna, as much consciousness. I get very offended when we say Krishna's energy is impersonal. I don't see any impersonal in Krishna. Krishna's energy is as much personal as Krishna. Krishna's Shakti is as much personal as Krishna. Mm. And if we as devotees, we should see it as a person. We shouldn't see it as an impersonal energy, if we are devotees.
I think it's a comment.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, but that is the truth. That behind, you know, there's the ultimate reality is just persons. You know, especially when we hear about the spiritual world, but also even here, as you're pointing out, right? So this is, and if we're truly dealing with persons at all times, I think it will help us to be more careful with each other. Like you said, how do you treat the earth? If you just take it as dirt and some things, you may think, oh, whatever, it's this big mass of earth. But if you think it's a person, oh, I should be careful how I interact. So it is a nice meditation, and it is the ultimate truth. Bhakti Devi, Bhakti is sometimes called an energy, but it's also Bhakti Devi. It's also a personality. So sometimes the energy and the person are also simultaneous, because Bhakti is referred to by the Acharyas as an energy of the Lord. Shakti means. And also it's Bhakti is described as a goddess. So here we are again with the karma and the bhakti and the personalism. Somehow things can kind of come together in an inconceivable way and both be true simultaneously. That's why certain things are achintya.
There are sects of Vaishnavism that only worship Krishna without Radharani. That right. We worship Krishna and Radharani. We worship the energy and the energetic. They're inseparable. We don't just see Krishna. We don't just see Radharani. Yeah. It's Krishna and Radharani. Impersonalists only see energy. Some Vaishnava sects only see Krishna. Mm. We see Krishna and Radharani. Mm-hmm. It's both together, the energy and the energetic. Never inseparable. You cannot separate it.
Yeah.
And Prabhu, I was asking the question to him. I wasn't talking to you. And I think you're getting a little bit too proud or too puffed up, a bit out of authority. And I just think you need to humble yourself. Just my observation. Hari Bol.
Just a little clarification. You mentioned Haridas Thakur with Maya Devi's presence in his life, how he was not moved by her full presence. Mm. He was a young man. I mean, I like the way Prabhupada dramatically paint in one lecture. He said Haridas Thakur is a young man, and Mayadevi appeared middle of the night, which is like a time for intercourse. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And she is fully dressed well, and she approached, but he was not moved. But then question come, Lord Shiva, he was also fully absorbed in meditation of the Lord. And she came, and she actually made him fall for her desire as a Kartikeya born. In Bhagavad Gita 2.62, Prabhupada gives that. And many commentators, they literally comment why Prabhupada is saying that need to be understood. Is that Shiva's position is lower than Haridas Thakur? That he could not. Here we say Kashyapa Muni, you said four things, right? And one of them was the mentality of the husband.
Yeah.
So you also mentioned that he was weak. I mean, Bhagavatam also said that. He was weak, Prabhupada said that.
Yeah.
That when she approached Diti, Kashyapa's mentality, he was not strong internally.
Yeah.
As a result, he fell for it.
Yeah.
But you didn't say, of course, that Shiva fall for it because he was weak? No. Mm-hmm. We can't say that Shiva is weak like Kashyapa Muni.
Mm-hmm.
Because then it will be not a proper way to look at Shiva's position.
Mm.
He is the master of Maya.
Yeah.
There is a purpose, maybe we can rephrase it such a way, other way, that yes, Haridas Thakur, through the power of bhakti, Mahaprabhu, holy name, conquered over Maya. Even Maya Devi became a disciple. Yeah. Never heard in the history that Maya Devi became a disciple of someone after got defeated.
Mm.
But Shiva got defeated by her.
Mm.
So how do you put it together?
Shiva. Yeah, this is, you know, I it's a kind of an answer that is very quick and simple, but I think there are some. In terms of like, you know, there's a kind of lila, you know. With Shiva, you know, there's some mention also that he desired to see, you know, the full power of the illusory energy of the Lord. There's also another story like that in Bhagavatam too, I remember. You know, let me see the power of this Maya, which means like, let, you know, like a request to come under it. Think about it. So if he's requesting to come under it, means he doesn't have to be under it, but he wants to see Krishna's power over him, in a sense, and will allow for it. You know, so it's made as like a request. What's the other story in Bhagavatam?
Mohini,
like?
Mohini.
Yeah, Mohini. Yeah, Mohini, same thing. Like, let me see just
and
how
Maya
powerful.
Devi was next to him.
Uh-huh.
She was sitting there, but he ignored it.
Yeah.
He didn't even see that she's there.
Right. So Shiva, I think, you know, Shiva tattva is very, very high. Of course, we say he's the greatest of Vaishnavas, and it's a whole, he's his own tattva, so it's very, very glorious. So I think there's no question of him being overpowered in that way, unless there was some desire to be overpowered, you know, which sometimes we see that happens. Some devotee may be so powerful, but has a desire to be overpowered. So that's all I can say about that. But
that's good.
Yeah.
Also, in four topics, the last one you said obedience of demigod.
Yes.
But I didn't hear much about, like.
Yes, connected to the astrology. You know, like the planets and the demigods. Oh, by see. Doing certain things for the demigods, they will be, you know, pacified, and that way they will also provide good situation for a child. Like good. So it's related to the planets, planetary. You know.
But then somebody may question, I'm sorry, I know we went over. Isn't the soul are already in the, because there's the famous verse, karmana daivanetra, in third canto, we're coming in future. Karmana daivanetrena jantur deha upapatti, striya pavishtam udaram pungsharata konasraya. How the soul enter into the womb of mother from the, through the genital of the father. I'm giving a slang translation, but that's how it is. So the soul was in Kashyapa's body before he placed it in the womb of Diti.
That's what Bhagavatam says. Yeah.
So you
first
cannot
in the man.
Just blame Diti on me. I'm not trying to blame.
Yeah, yeah. No.
So he already had the child within him.
Well, the soul is drawn once certain things start to take place. So, you know, from what I understand, you know, the soul gets drawn. Like when I say once the parents decide, let's have a child, and then there's a being that now will get drawn to, let's say, and like as you're saying, Kashyapa, perhaps, because it says, and also the womb of the woman, but like it may start before that in the semen of the man. So I don't, it's not that, you know, so there's a process that takes place. So there's some soul there, and now these two parents, there's going to be a conception, there's going to be a possibility of birth into this material world. So then different souls may come and enter in at a particular moment like that. That's how I understand.
Okay.
So.
It's a nice topic.
Because
I was thinking also, 16th chapter Bhagavad Gita, it says three things Prabhupada writes. Half of the purport is all about these three things. Abhayam satta sangsuddhi jnana yoga vivastiti. Devotees should purify their existence every day. So you mentioned about my understanding from the Prabhupada's purport that contemplation, 2.62, contemplation creates desire. Attraction comes from the impression. If there was no impression before in my heart, I will not be attracted, whatever it is. So whatever come pass through me, through my mind, I'm not responsible in one sense. It's thrown by the demigods. But I am responsible for the dominance because I'm allowing myself to contemplate. Maybe I should check it.
I take it from
correct,
myself.
Correct. So from that point, we are responsible. So far we got involved ourselves, and nobody to be blamed for. Krishna may sanction it, but that's his duty, but he is not responsible for that. We are. Okay.
Yeah.
So it is Kashyapa's fault also. That's why Bhagavatam is focusing on that. Otherwise you think like, what, demons supposed to come? They supposed to come. Come on, it's not his fault. It is his fault. Because he contemplated. Was not like a accidentally happened. No, their conversation, you're reading, hearing. So there is a contemplation.
Yes.
And they're responsible because of that.
Right. It's hard to see how it's all happening.
Yeah.
But it is. That's the genius of the creation and of God, that these things are all perfectly coordinated. Okay. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki, Srila Prabhupada Ki.